front porch a bishop's emblem.
This pastoral staff really is a shepherd's crook. It was carved for me by a Palestinian shepherd in Bethlehem. So this is about as close to the source as you can get.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. On Sunday, Gene Robinson takes up his pastoral staff as Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire in a ceremony called Investiture. It's the final step in taking office for the first openly gay bishop in church history. His nomination turned New Hampshire into the flashpoint of a worldwide debate in the Anglican Communion. Some were harshly critical. They called the choice of Robinson an offense against God and Scripture. They warned of a loss in attendance, lower financial support, even a split in the church in America and around the world. And here in New Hampshire, a church in Rochester rebelled against his nomination. Today, as he prepares to take office, we catch up with Bishop Robinson, get his thoughts on all the controversy and where the church goes from here. First, he tells us about the ceremony of investiture.
It's intriguing in lots of ways. It's based on lots of history, of course, as most liturgies in the church are. And rather than beginning with a grand procession, which is how the consecration began in November, this one begins with everyone quietly taking their seats in the congregation. And the only one not in the church is me. And the service begins with me rapping three times on the church door. And then a delegation, so to speak, is sent to greet me at the front door of the church and to invite me in, where the current bishop, Bishop Douglas Thurner, transfers the authority of the office of the episcopate from himself as the current bishop to me, the ninth bishop of New Hampshire. And that's symbolically done by passing over the shepherd's crook, the pastoral staff called a crozier.
What's the difference between consecration and investiture, and who's been bishop the last few months?
Right. The consecration is the ordination of a person as a bishop. Mm-hmm. So I became a bishop of the church on November 2nd. And between that time and this Sunday, I have been the bishop coadjutor, which means that when the current bishop retires, I have the immediate right of succession. And that happens then on this Sunday when the eighth bishop of New Hampshire formally retires.
There was so much publicity and controversy before your consecration. Has it changed any since then?
Well, mercifully, it has calmed down some. I'm not being followed around the way I was for a while there. And I've been able to become the Bishop of New Hampshire, which is what I was called to do, what the people of the diocese called me to do. And it's what I enjoy doing the most. There is a little more interest just because of this service that's coming up, the investiture. But for the most part, I'm enjoying being the bishop that the people have called me to be.
What does the bishop do?
Gosh, one of the reasons I love being a bishop is that no 2 days are alike, so it's impossible to say what is typical. First and foremost are is the pastoral care of both congregations and particularly the clergy. The clergy are the pastors of their people. The bishop is the pastor to the clergy and their families. So I have a particular responsibility for our clergy, both priests and deacons and their families, and then the ongoing pastoral care in congregations. Interestingly, and most people don't think of bishops being in this role, I think, that involves a lot of conflict management. If a parish is going really, really well, rarely do you get a priest who will call you up on Monday morning and say, gosh, I preached a great sermon yesterday, and the place was packed, and the music was great, and so on. Usually you get the call on Monday morning saying, gee, I've got this disaster about to happen. Can you help? So I spend quite a lot of time assisting congregations in various kinds of reconciliation.
And unlike, say, bishops in the Catholic Church, the Episcopal hierarchy is much less sort of top-down. You do not
That's
have nearly
correct.
The power that a Catholic bishop would have.
That's right. It's very interesting. A lot of people in the Episcopal Church have come to it as adults, and they have come to it either from the Roman Catholic Church or from more Protestant denominations. The Protestants who have become Episcopalians want to know who this guy, the bishop, is, and who does he think he is coming in here like this. And the former Roman Catholics wonder why the bishop isn't doing more to stop or start something. So yes, it's very different. It's much more a ministry with folks rather than a ministry over them.
Before your consecration, there had been threats on your life and security precautions were taken. Have those things continued?
Yes, but they're greatly diminished. And the less I'm in the news, the better news that is for me along those lines. It's still a concern, but as I say, I'm certainly not being prevented in any way from exercising my ministry.
How has the reaction been in the last few months within the New Hampshire diocese?
I have to tell you that I have had just the best time becoming the Bishop of New Hampshire. The people of this diocese are so extraordinary. I am just astounded at their hospitality, their warm welcome of me and my partner Mark. And they are so excited about our future together, the ministry that we are crafting together. And we're really very much doing it together. I've put together this committee called Reimagining the Diocese. And over this next 8 or 10 months, we are literally interviewing every congregation in the diocese to say, what are your dreams for the future? If we were to become the church God would have us be, what would it look like? And how would we be organized? And what would we be spending our money on? What would we be speaking out about? And by our diocesan convention in October, we hope to have a bold and dramatic new plan for how to be the Diocese of New Hampshire. So that has been so exciting. And the other thing, of course, is that I'm in at least one parish every Sunday, if not more. And that has just been the very best time of all, to worship with folks, to I almost always do a forum so that anybody can ask the bishop anything that's on their mind, and we have a chance to really forge this new relationship.
After this Sunday, you'll have to answer questions about your hat and your stick.
That's right. The stick will be with me. I'm very proud of this this particular stick. This pastoral staff really is a shepherd's crook. It was carved for me by a Palestinian shepherd in Bethlehem. So this is about as close to the source as you can get. I wanted something very plain, and I also wanted a pastoral staff that really was a shepherd's crook. And this will look a little bit different than other pastoral staffs that you see. Instead of a big, wide loop at the top, it has quite a narrow one. And if you know anything about catching lambs by their hind leg, if you've got a big loop, they can get out of it easily. So this one is a very small kind of a crook. It really is a shepherd's crook. And the artist who did it, this shepherd who carves these, and it's a beautiful olive wood finished with beeswax and so on. But just above where I hold it with my hand, he put in something that I didn't ask for. I wanted it very, very plain. And if he had asked me, I probably would have said I wouldn't like it, but I love it. It's a small, almost a sphere, but if you look closely, it's been shaped, and it is the skyline of Jerusalem. So it's a way for me to keep that part of the world not only in front of my own eyes, but in front of the eyes of the diocese. It's a part of the world that I've spent quite a lot of time in and have very strong feelings about. So this particular stick has a lot of meaning for me.
Gene Robinson is on the front porch on NHPR. He is the Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire. He's being formally invested in office this Sunday in Concord. There's one church in the diocese that doesn't accept your authority, the Church of the Redeemer in Rochester. What happens to them?
Well, what happens to them is that we continue in conversation with them.
What if they don't want to talk to you?
Well, it seems that they do want to talk. I've quite recently had a really wonderful conversation with their new senior warden. My canon to the ordinary, that is my sort of chief of staff, has recently paid a visit over there and really had a very good evening of conversation with them. They are still under my authority. I still have pastoral responsibility for oversight of that congregation. I take that very seriously. And I care about what happens to the people who are there. I've tried my best to provide them with supply priests who more or less agree with them. I've gotten them people who are not very happy about my election, but who are also understanding that we can't have someone in there who wants to undermine my authority as the bishop. I believe that over time we'll be able to work this out. And as I say, our conversations are going very, very well.
There are some in that congregation who have refused to take communion from priests who have been sent there, which is a big step. I think people who aren't Episcopal or aren't Christian might not understand that, but that is a big step for people to take. Do you feel any responsibility for that?
Well, they have to decide from whom they will and will not take communion. I think it is a very serious matter when we won't sit down at the table with one another. It'd be very odd to invite someone into your home and then refuse to go to the dinner table when the chatting around the fireplace is over. I'm hopeful that over time that will happen. Whether or not to take communion is a very individual choice, and certainly no one should feel compelled to do it. But I believe when that begins to happen again and people are taking communion, it'll be a sign that we're really making progress.
Has anyone refused to take communion from you?
Not to my knowledge.
Come up to the front.
No. Well, they may stay in their seats for some reason. Yeah. It's very interesting, though. In a number of our congregations, let's say at the forum that would precede the service, someone would be very open with me about their difficulties with my election and consecration. And then it's so interesting because in those forums, I talk about the importance of our staying in touch with one another, that we can continue to come to the altar rail and receive communion, even though we disagree about this and perhaps about abortion or who should be president or any number of things. My gosh, Episcopalians are all over the map with those issues. And yet we still come to the altar rail. And what has been so humbling and wonderful is to have finished such a discussion with someone at the forum and then have them present themselves to me for communion, not to go to someone else for the communion because I'm not the only one distributing it. It would be very easy for them to cross over and go to the rector of the parish, for instance, for communion, but instead present themselves to me. And I'm just very moved by that. And I think as long as we can continue to do that, we're going to be just fine.
There's been some talk in that church in Rochester of going under the supervision of another bishop. The Bishop of Albany, New York, has been mentioned. Is that something that might happen? Would you try to prevent that from happening?
Well, it actually can't happen. Mm-hmm. By the canons of the church, every church is under the oversight of the local bishop, and that simply cannot be transferred to someone else. If we're talking about alternative or supplemental episcopal pastoral care, I would be certainly open to talking with them about someone coming in to visit to offer Episcopal services of confirmation and that kind of thing, as long as it were someone, again, who is not going to undermine the authority that not only is mine by virtue of the canons, but is something that's laid on me by the church. It's a responsibility that I've been given, and I intend to live up to that vow.
There has been talk of a whole separate network of conservative churches, for lack of a better word, that don't want to be associated with a church that consecrates you as a bishop.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that happening? Could there be a split in the Episcopal Church?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, this is a group of people who were going to leave if I was elected. And then they were going to leave if I was consented to at the General Convention. And then they were going to leave if I was consecrated. And now they're saying they're going to stay and become a church within a church, a sort of a realignment, a kind of network. So I think we're seeing an incredible backing off of any talk of real schism. These are people who said that we are literally out the door if you go forward with this. And in fact, it's not happening. There are very, very few people remotely talking about anything that serious. We've always had various alignments. Back 20, 30 years ago, we had alignments for high church Episcopal churches and low church Episcopal churches. We've had all kinds of alignments before. I happen to believe that this is God's church. I don't mean just the Episcopal Church, but the whole church is God's church. And God's going to take care of God's church.
What do you say to people who honestly believe your consecration is a sin, an offense against God?
One of the things that I've begun to say both to people locally as well as internationally is come and see. come and see what life is like in the Episcopal Church here in New Hampshire, and then determine whether or not you see God at work here. When I call the diocese together to sort of begin my episcopate with them, I call them to two things. One was infinite respect, and the other was radical hospitality. I think if we show one another infinite respect within the church, and then we are radically hospitable to all those beyond our walls, we will be doing God's work.
Is there more pressure on you than there is on any other bishop?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you'd have to ask Barbara Harris whether she had more pressure as the first woman or Absalom Jones as the first African-American ordained a priest. I think people who go first do experience a certain amount of pressure. It's not whether there's more pressure. It's just what you do with it. And I am so supported in this ministry by the people of the Diocese of New Hampshire. The pressure doesn't bother me.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with Gene Robinson, Bishop of the New Hampshire Diocese of the Episcopal Church. Last November, he was consecrated as bishop, becoming the first openly gay bishop in church history. On Sunday, he takes the final step in the process in a ceremony called investiture. At least 9 of the 38 Anglican provinces around the world have declared broken or impaired communion with the Episcopal Church of the USA because of your consecration. Do you expect a split in the broader Anglican communion?
I certainly hope not, and I don't think it's going to happen. We have several indications about that. One is, while these provinces, and remember, it's not the whole province. It's not 30 million Anglicans in Nigeria. It's the primate. It's one person at the top of that organization who is declaring impaired communion. And in fact, we've been in impaired communion with lots of provinces ever since we ordained Barbara Harris, the first woman bishop. Barbara would not be invited to exercise her ministry in most provinces of the Anglican Communion, and yet we've held together. And it's very interesting that these 9 provinces that you mentioned, none of them have sent our missionaries home. None of them are saying, oh, please don't send us the checks that you send us to help us with our ministry. There are all kinds of connections that are still in place, and no one is suggesting that we should in any way diminish our contributions financially or in terms of missionaries and so on to those places. And I believe that over time, even those places will see that not much has changed just because there's a gay guy sitting in the bishop's chair in New Hampshire.
There's a gap between churches in the developed world and the developing world, and it's reflected in the reaction to your consecration. It's churches in the developing world that seem to be socially liberal but very doctrinally conservative who are most upset with your taking office. Are you concerned about this kind of a split between North and South or between First and Third World?
Well, I am very concerned about it, not so much along these lines as I am about economic lines and the way that some call it the me-first world treats the two-thirds world. But in terms of my election and these issues, I do think that in the developing world, there have, for whatever reason, and I think probably it's mostly cultural, folks have not had a chance to ever actually meet someone who is openly gay or lesbian, self-affirming, self-identifying. And so it's a real theoretical issue with so many of them. Whereas in the more developed nations, I think people have had a chance to know people who are gay or lesbian, people who are contributors to their communities, indeed who are members of their families. I am told, and many others are told by people in some of the developing nations, you know, we have no gay people here. And if we did, we would put them out of our society. So it's no wonder why folks would hesitate to come out. I was invited to speak at a conference in England last fall and actually appeared there via satellite downlink. But the person from Uganda who spoke there is now in hiding because as soon as he went home, he was pursued by the authorities. It's a very dangerous part of the world to be open about one's sexuality.
We've been talking a lot about controversy and schism and the difficulties of your taking office and the consequences of that. Have you seen positive effects as well?
There were positive effects almost immediately after my election in June, we had so many new people showing up at our doors, somehow seeing the election as a real sign that here was a church who really was willing to open its doors and its arms to anyone. And we had so many people showing up saying, you know, we want to raise our kids in this kind of an environment. And they came from the Roman Catholic Church. There were some folks who not who had become disillusioned because of the scandals going on in the Roman Catholic Church, but also from Protestant denominations, and perhaps most gratifyingly of all, people who had left the Episcopal Church a long time ago because it didn't seem to be bold enough and loving enough and accepting enough. And you wouldn't believe the number of people who would come up to me and say, you know, I haven't been in church for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years and now I want to come back. Or a parent saying, you know, I got this call from my son and he told me he went to church this Sunday. We can't believe it. He hasn't been in church in 20 years. So there's a lot of that going on, and not just here in New Hampshire, but really around the country.
I'm John Walters on the Front Porch with Gene Robinson, Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire. How do you feel about same-sex marriage?
Well, at the moment, I'm feeling like it's a great diversionary tactic being used by politicians so that we don't have to talk about Iraq and about the economy and why 45 million people don't have health insurance in this country and all the things that we really should be talking about. So that's one of the things that I feel about it. I also feel that it's really important as we move forward in this debate to understand that we've gotten very confused about marriage in this country, about whether it's a religious act or whether it's a civil act. And the fact is that it's both, but they are very separate things. What the Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts ruled on had nothing to do with religion. It has to do with a civil action that states take on about who can be married. Even the Puritans declared marriage to be a civil act, not a religious one. So it's very interesting that we're talking about this as a civil right. And the Episcopal Church has been on record for a couple of decades now for equal civil rights for gay and lesbian folk. The question of whether or not the church, or any church for that matter, should bless such a marriage is a completely separate issue, and one that I have no doubt churches will be arguing over for a lot of years to come. But as for the civil right, it's very interesting to me that the nation seems to be arguing over the same thing that the church is. The church is arguing about whether or not baptism means full membership in the church. And we as a nation are wondering whether or not citizenship means full citizenship for all citizens or only just for some.
Would you and your partner, Mark, get married if you could?
I would get married in a minute. I know that the kind of commitment that I have for my partner is that two married people would take on with one another. I would love the civil right to take on not just to gain the privileges, but to take on the responsibilities that marriage provides. And I think this is something that conservatives and liberals should join together on. After all, what we are all arguing for, I think, are faithful, monogamous, committed, lifelong intentioned relationships. And, I mean, we're all arguing for Christian family values. That ought to be something that liberals and conservatives could agree on.
Would you preside over same-sex unions, or have you?
I have presided over one or two of those same-sex unions, as has the bishop that I am succeeding. And I have preached at a civil union in Vermont. And I must say that was in a church and so on. But the fact that it had legal significance was an astounding thing, just to be present, to know that not only was something emotional and spiritual going on, but something legal as well. And I think that's the kind of thing we argue for in terms of marriage, that it's the kind of stability that the society builds in to enhance the ongoingness of those relationships. The point of marriage is to make them difficult to get out of. That's what helps you over some of those bumpy spots. And I think gay and lesbian couples Could benefit from that kind of societal affirmation and support as well.
So what's on your plate as Bishop of the Episcopal Church in New Hampshire? What are the issues you face? What are your priorities?
Well, you know, there are people who say that the definition of leadership is you find a parade and then get out in front of it. And things are happening very quickly and in a very exciting way here in the Diocese of New Hampshire. And I'm just trying to stay out front and pretend that I'm leading this parade. So we're very much looking into this reimagining the diocese. I'm very excited about how that's going to come out. I'm not controlling the process, but I am a part of it. And I think we're going to come up with something very exciting. I've said often that I would like to see the diocese become a spokesperson in the civil debates that we're having here in the state. I think the funding for education is a moral issue, and we suffer from this disease, I think, here in the state, perhaps around the nation, of saying, if my kids are okay, then to heck with yours. And what we need to be saying is that all of our children are all of our responsibility. And so I think the church ought to be saying that our getting this thing solved and adequately funded is the responsibility of all of us. And it's not just a public issue. It's a moral issue. I mentioned health care and the fact that in this nation we have so many people without access to health insurance and so on. That's a moral issue. How could the richest nation on earth leave so many people one illness away from poverty and bankruptcy and real tragedy? So I would like to see us speaking out on those issues. And I guess the other high priority for me are young people and young adults, teenagers and young adults. I think the church has not served them terribly well in the past. Most of our churches have not made the gospel, the really good news of Jesus Christ, relevant in a way that makes any kind of sense to teenagers and young adults. And I think that's a great failing. And so I'd like to see us put time and money and people toward that effort.
Well, Bishop Robinson, thanks very much for coming in today.
It's wonderful to be back. Thanks.
Gene Robinson, Bishop of the New Hampshire Diocese of the Episcopal Church. Last November, he became the first openly gay bishop in the church's history. On Sunday, he will be formally invested as bishop in a ceremony at St. Paul's Church in Concord.